Syrian media say the country's air defenses have confronted an Israeli act of aggression in the western province of Homs. Russia says relations between Moscow and Washington are nearing a dangerous confrontational threshold. Also coming up, Colombian police arrest dozens of people following fresh nationwide protests against the government's proposed tax reform bill. Thank you for joining us. Syrian air defenses have intercepted several Israeli missiles over the western province of Homs. A military source says the attack has only caused material damage. Our Damascus correspondent joined us earlier with more on the incidents.
Syrian state media confirmed that there has been an Israeli aggression on Syria, particularly on the city of on the governorate of Homs. The Syrian state TV also confirmed that the attack exactly targeted the area of Al-Qusair. Al-Qusair is a border town with Lebanon. It's just 8 kilometers away from northern Lebanon over there. No further details were given by any official source yet. However, usually a statement comes out from an official military source giving some detail. What we know for sure is that air defenses were activated directly with the aim of intercepting the enemy missiles. Now, this Israeli attack comes only 24 hours after a similar one in which Israel attacked yesterday the area of Al-Sfera, south of Aleppo, targeting Syrian army positions over there.
Elsewhere, the Russian Foreign Ministry has warned that relations between Moscow and Washington are nearing a dangerous confrontational threshold. The ministry, in a statement, blamed the U.S. for provoking what is called an unprecedented escalation over the past years. The statement added that America's pressure on Russia will be met with unwavering opposition from the Kremlin. It said bilateral cooperation could only be successful on the basis of mutual respect and non-interference in the two sides' internal affairs. The U.S. and Russia are at odds over a range of issues. These include Ukraine, the Ukraine crisis, and claims of Russia's involvement in cyber attacks against U.S. institutions and interference in its presidential election. Russia denies those claims. Political commentator George Sazimwelli says Russia is getting fed up with the United States accusations.
Generally, extremely tired of these constant accusations of, you went through some of those things, interference in the domestic affairs of other countries, including the United States, cyber attacks, and the rest of it. I mean, today, for instance, Germany and the United States signed an agreement regarding Nord Stream 2. And again, the agreement came with a whole lot of rhetorical flourishes against Russia. Russia's using the energy sector in order to intimidate its neighbors. And Russia, of course, never done anything like that. So what I think this Russian Foreign Ministry statement is saying is that, you know, we're really very tired of all of this. If you want to cooperate with us, we're ready to cooperate. And as seemed to have come out of Geneva, that there are issues on which Russia and the United States are ready to cooperate on. What we're not going to put up with, I think this is the thrust of the statement, is that, well, we cooperate on issues that you want to cooperate on, but the rest of the time we're going to go around constantly accusing you, the Russians, of all these terrible things. And I think that's what this statement is about, saying, you want to work with us, we're ready to work with you, but stop already with these constant accusations against us.
Now, the U.S. House of Representatives Speaker has kicked two Republicans out of a select committee she created to investigate the deadly January 6th protests on the Capitol Hill. Nancy Pelosi says she rejects the appointment of Representatives Jim Jordan and Jim Banks, who are both staunch supporters of former President Donald Trump. Pelosi created the 13-member committee after Republican senators voted down a proposal to establish a 9/11-style commission to probe the unrest. Now, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy responded to Pelosi's move by pulling all Republicans from the panel. He said the GOP would not be part of what he called a sham process. Four people and one police officer were killed when pro-Trump protesters assaulted the Congress on January the 6th. Colin Campbell says Republicans are walking back on the rhetoric against Trump because they know he is the lifeblood of the party right now.
We saw a lot of Republicans speaking vehemently against what happened, many of them speaking against the president's rhetoric, saying that the president was responsible. Well, we've seen them walk that back quite a bit since then, and because they know that the former president is still the lifeblood of the party right now. He's still wildly popular, even though we know that Joe Biden won the popular vote and the electoral vote. We still have to remember tens of millions of people still voted for the former president. So He still has his followers out there. He still wants to lead the Republican Party. He's still holding rallies. So he's still very much a relevant part of the Republican Party. A lot of Republicans know this. So they are, again, sticking their weight with the former president, because they know that he has a lot of influence. And that's why you're seeing a lot of Republicans who are a lot more timiditous about offering their perspectives with authenticity, like they were doing just after the insurrection early January.
Colombian police have arrested 70 people following fresh anti-government protests across the country. The rallies follow Tuesday's demonstrations that led to clashes between protesters and riot police. Dozens of civilians and security officers were wounded during Tuesday's protests. The government claims armed groups have infiltrated the demonstrations. Colombia was rocked by weeks of protests that broke out late April in opposition to a proposed tax hike. In a bid to subdue the unrest, the government has now proposed a new tax reform plan. Political commentator Ahmed Altuani says Colombia has one of the most unequal social systems in Latin America.
I've been to Colombia, and it's one of the most unequal countries in Latin America. This whole idea with the value-added tax to provide services, this is something that has been present in other Latin American countries and was just new to Colombia. But what Colombia and the government of Duque did wrong is that they put this tax onto the working class community as opposed to having it as a wealth tax or an income tax or something like that, right? And so you're seeing people who are struggling already because of the pandemic. Unemployment has jumped from, 6% up to 16% because of the pandemic. They're already struggling, and to add an additional tax to them, generally speaking, most Colombians felt that it was unfair, and they just got sick of this right-wing government that has ruled them for so many generations. And even as Duque pulled those tax reforms, I think it was 5 days after the start of these protests on April 28th, it's expanded into, we just don't want a right-wing government anymore. We want to have our human rights. We want to decrease the wealth gaps. And that's what they're asking for now from the legislative branch, who probably don't want to lose their popularity come election time next.
A top U.S. general says Taliban militants are now in control of 200 out of some 420 district centers in Afghanistan. General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, added that the militants seem to have gained a sort of strategic momentum. Last month, Milley said the militants controlled 81 district centers in Afghanistan. The American general also noted that the group had not taken over any provincial capitals, but they were putting pressure on the outskirts. Instead, Taliban military gains come against the backdrop of Kabul urging the group to halt its offensive after the two sides failed to agree on a ceasefire at a peace meeting in Qatar. Meanwhile, Tehran has unveiled a documentary film called Life Among War Flags, which narrates different aspects of conflicts between armed groups, including Taliban militants. As Saman Khajuri reports, the film has revealed a big secret called Taliban and clearly responds to questions which have for long been formed in the minds of international audiences regarding the militant group in Afghanistan.
The Iranian documentary film Life Among War Flags, which focuses on Afghanistan and the Taliban, directed by Mohsen Islamzadeh and produced by Press TV, has been unveiled in Tehran in the presence of the filmmakers. The documentary movie Life Among War Flags narrates a different story of conflicts between armed groups in Afghanistan. Moreover, it has made research on the role of the Afghan government in such conflicts.
I have been making documentaries for about 17 years now. The Life Among War Flags depicts the story of people whose region is controlled sometimes by the Taliban, sometimes by Daesh, and sometimes by a central Afghan government and the US forces. I believe they are the main victims of the war in Afghanistan. Making this documentary film was very difficult because we had to risk our lives when we went among Taliban forces. We even took part in several Taliban operations to make this documentary film.
One of the special features about this documentary is that they have shown the inner side of the Taliban, which is very dangerous and difficult. Making such a documentary will definitely raise public awareness about the real nature of such groups, which is of course so risky for the filmmakers.
The production of this documentary took 19 months to complete. The documentary's director says it has unveiled a big secret called Taliban and clearly has responded to questions which have for long been formed in the minds of international audiences regarding the nature of the militant group. The documentary film Life Among War Flags takes a deeper look at the lives of Afghan people who have tolerated years of war and bloodshed under different names and have learned to show flexibility to survive. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Turning to Greece, where police have fired tear gas and water cannon to disperse crowds protesting against mandatory coronavirus vaccinations. About 1,500 people took part in the march on the parliament in Athens against the government's COVID-19 inoculation drive. A similar rally was held last Wednesday and drew more than 5,000 people. The demonstrations were held despite Greece witnessing a surge in infections in recent weeks. Meanwhile, hundreds of people have gathered in France's capital to protest against the implementation of a health pass and compulsory vaccinations. Some protesters were carrying banners reading, quote, freedom to choose and hands off my natural immunity. The protests come as the French government seeks to rein in a fourth wave of COVID-19 infections in the country. The British Meat Processors Association says the country's food supply chains are on an edge of failing as a workforce absence related to COVID-19 aggravates a critical shortage of labor. The meat industry body said some members of the association have reported that between 5 to 10% of their workers were asked to self-isolate by the government's COVID-19 tracing application. On Monday, England's car plants, railways and supermarkets also warned that the government that the tracing app was wrecking the recovery and pushing supply chains to the brink of collapse. Alerts from the official app telling anyone identified as a contact of someone with the disease to self-isolate for 10 days have also reportedly disrupted schools and the healthcare system. Now, a senior EU official has rejected a UK demand to renegotiate post-Brexit trading arrangements for Northern Ireland. European Commission Vice President Maros Sefcovic said the bloc will not renegotiate the so-called Northern Ireland Protocol, which requires checks on goods crossing over from the mainland Britain. However, the official said the EU will seek creative solutions to difficulties caused by Brexit in the trade between Britain and Northern Ireland. That's after the UK's Northern Ireland Secretary Brandon Lewis warned that London would be justified in unilaterally deviating from the deal on Northern Ireland. However, he told the British Parliament that London prefers a renegotiation of the protocol included in the Brexit deal.
As we have sought to operate the protocol, it is clear that its burdens have been the source of considerable and ongoing disruption to lives and livelihoods. We see an opportunity to proceed differently, to find a new path, to seek to agree with the EU through negotiations a new balance in our arrangements covering Northern Ireland to the benefit of all.
Lewis said the new balance is required to enable Northern Ireland to continue to have access, normal access, to goods from the rest of the UK. The protocol was part of the settlement that finally sealed Britain's divorce from the bloc. The protocol was painstakingly negotiated to avoid a hard border with Ireland by effectively keeping Northern Ireland in the EU single market. Several UK companies have already suspended sales to Northern Ireland, frustrated at the new red tape. Since the UK officially left the EU, Northern Ireland was rocked by violence this year, in part against the protocol. The EU has long insisted that it is up to London to implement what it had agreed in the Brexit deal. Our Brussels-based correspondent Jerome Hughes says the United Kingdom's demand for a new post-Brexit deal on Northern Ireland shows its division with the EU.
It is a deep division, and it's a growing problem between Brussels and London. And, you know, what the European Commission is trying to be somewhat diplomatic if you read through the statement, because it says it's willing to closely examine the new proposals put forward by London to try and reduce friction between Britain and Northern Ireland, but that any solutions must be within the parameters, within the terms of the Northern Ireland Protocol, because the European Commission is saying this protocol is enshrined in international law, it has to be respected. The fact is that, you know, you have a situation whereby border checks are happening at ports in Northern Ireland because Northern Ireland remains in the customs union of the EU. And these border checks are essential, according to the European Commission, to make sure that, you know, goods that come in to the EU effectively, because they can simply go down to the Republic of Ireland, that they meet EU standards. Also, it prevents a hard border, which means that the Northern Ireland, the Good Friday Agreement, is preserved. And so it's the only show in town, according to the European Commission. And David Frost is saying, though, that it's unsustainable. So it's difficult to know how this can be resolved.
That brings an end to our news bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. a self-powered robot inspired by a fish can survive the extreme pressures at the bottom of the ocean's deepest trench thanks to its soft body and distributed electronic system, and might enable exploration of the uncharted ocean. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Cecilia Lasci Ryder. This article is published under the heading Soft Robot Reaches the Deepest Part of the Ocean. Stay tuned for more. Riding in nature, Lee et al. Report a robot made from soft materials that can brave the unexplored depths of the sea. Remarkably, the authors demonstrate that the robot can operate in the Mariana Trench, the deepest part of the ocean. Conventional underwater vehicles require watertight enclosures made of metallic materials to withstand the high pressures of the deep ocean. The thickness and dimensions of these enclosures have to be increased to cope with greater depth. But in Lee and colleagues' robot, the delicate electronic components are embedded and distributed in soft silicon, a design that removes the need for pressure-resistant cases. Largely inspired by living organisms, the field of soft robotics involves making robots from pliable materials. Polymers such as silicon are often used, as well as highly deformable structures such as braids and textiles. Soft robots are intrinsically safer than their conventional rigid counterparts in interactions with humans, and their pliability can boost many capabilities, such as their dexterity when manipulating objectives, and their ability to squeeze into tight spaces or to travel across uneven surfaces. Marine species such as squid and octopus were one of the original inspirations for soft robotics research. But soft robotics in turn offers a new approach for tackling marine applications of robots. Lee and colleagues' work is a powerful demonstration of this. The author's robot is designed to have a fish-like body shape and two flapping side fins. The authors used the well-established mechanism to drive flapping. The fins are attached to muscles on the robot's body. These are made of a soft material that converts electrical energy into mechanical work. When an electric current from the robot's battery is applied to the muscles, they contract. Tiny solid structures mechanically connect the contracting muscles to the fins, making them flap. One of the challenges faced by Lee and co-workers was finding a way to protect the robot's electronic components from high pressures. Taking inspiration from the bones in the skull of the Haddle snailfish, the authors spaced the electronic components apart rather than packing them together as is typically done in electronic devices. Laboratory tests and simulations demonstrated that this arrangement reduces the stress at the interfaces between components under pressure. The distributed electronics were then embedded in silicon for incorporation into the robot. This approach is more practical and cheaper than other methods for protecting electronics in deep sea devices. Lee et al. First tested the swimming ability of the robot in the lab. In a pressurized water chamber, the robot was connected to a pole, which it swam around in a circle. The machine was then tested in a lake at a depth of 70 meters. where it swam freely at a speed of 3.16 centimeters per second. And then in South China Sea, at a depth of about 3,200 meters, it reached a speed of 5.19 centimeters, equivalent to 45 tenth body length per second, which is in line with the capabilities of other soft robots. Finally, the flapping movement and pressure resistance of the robot were tested in the Mariana Trench, where it was connected to a conventional underwater robot for support, which also took images of the test. Several previous attempts have been made to develop soft robots for applications underwater, a realm in which it is challenging for robots to interact delicately with objects because robotic sensors don't work well in this environment. Soft robotic grippers offer substantial advantages over rigid grasping devices when collecting and handling delicate sea organisms for study by marine biologists. And bio-inspired soft robotic fishes can swim among other animals without distressing them, thereby allowing close-up study. Lee and co-workers' research now pushes the boundaries of what can be achieved. The replacement of rigid protective enclosures for electronic components by distributed electronics embedded in a soft material paves the way for a new generation of deep-sea explorers. There is, however, more work to do before the ocean can be populated with robots of this type of design. Lee and co-workers' machine is a slower than previously reported underwater robots and cannot withstand sizable disturbances. It could easily be swept away by underwater currents. Its locomotor capabilities will also need to be optimized for practical applications. However, Lee and colleagues' approach lays the foundations for future generations of resilient and reliable deep-sea explorers. In the long term, one can predict avenues of research being opened up for marine biology, in which soft robots safely navigate coral reefs or underwater caves to collect delicate specimens without damaging them. Swarms of underwater soft robots with the ability to crawl on the seabed, anchor themselves on to specific structures, or swim over particular areas could contribute to the development of technologies for various other applications. These might include monitoring the ocean, cleaning up, and preventing sea pollution, or preventing marine biodiversity. More fundamentally, they could help researchers to explore the vast uncharted depth of the oceans.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. I'm here in the studio with my darling sister, Sister Razia Shamili. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam, my more dear
sister and friend, Sister Zainab.
We're discussing some really important, fascinating, and helpful points and hacks regarding pre-pregnancy preps, problems and issues both men and women face regarding their reproductive systems and private parts. We're focusing specifically these last few episodes on problems and illnesses men could be afflicted with, and Islamic and traditional, often homemade, easy, over-the-counter remedies that we can try out, inshallah ta'ala, to solve these problems. We've been discussing impotency on Muslim Lady for the last few episodes, and it's important to talk about it because, yeah. Well, you know, a Muslim lady...
These days, many men have this problem of impotency. We talked about points about the man's reproductive system, infections, and psychological issues, spiritual issues that men have to take into consideration. We're in the program of Muslim Lady, but as we said, a woman needs a partner, a healthy partner, in order to have a healthy offspring.
Right.
The health issues of a man is as important as the health issues of a woman.
Definitely.
We talked about problems of impotency in men. One very important factor which leads to men's infertility is the problem of mumps, you know, the sickness of mumps. So mumps is a viral infection that primarily affects the salivary glands that are located near your ears. If boys are inflicted with this kind of
infection.
Disease or infection, parents have to be extra careful because the temperature of the testicles rise, and this will lead somehow
long-term
to their
problems.
Long-term infertility problems in men.
Right.
Because too much heat or temperature kills the sperms, right? And you have to be very careful. Or any kind of damage to the testicles.
Naturally,
yeah.
It will, it will damage the system.
Yeah, damage the whole reproductive system in men. So you guys have to be very careful, right? According to medicine, even to medicine, it's been medically proven that men who wear tight underwears or tight pants, it creates problems in the reproductive system, in the reproductive organ, in their sperm production. Several jobs or occupations, such as drivers, people who work in mines, in humid places, in very hot places, they will have to be very careful because they are more confronting, they're more prone to
these ailments and these problems.
Yeah. One more point, too much cigarettes, smoking.
Nicotine
would also lead in infertility in men. We have almost completed the topic on men's reproductive system problems and solutions to them. And inshallah, up next is we're going to talk about women's reproductive system. And also, inshallah, we'll be talking about sources that we've used. We are using various sources in these series of programs, one of which is the book written by a lady called Zobeide Khodai.
Mm-hmm.
She has several volumes of books on traditional medicine. One of them is, Oh God, How Can I Have a Healthy and Virtuous Child? The other source that is available is The Green Pharmacy by James A. Duke. The other very important source is the Book of Qanun of Avicenna. I don't know how they translate it in English.
Right.
So these are three very good sources that are used for our programs.
We're going to be talking about how women can have proper self-care routine in order to take care of their reproductive systems and prepare themselves for conception in order to have sound, healthy, intelligent babies. And, of course, since we discussed certain home, simple, off-the-counter remedies for men and their specific ailments, we're probably going to be discussing those topics from this point onward as well.
Because the uterus of a woman is only a couple of grams.
Right.
And then during the process of pregnancy,
it becomes huge.
It becomes huge and has to be able to hold up to 3, 4, 5 kilogram baby.
Or even more for those who have triplets,
exactly.
Quadruplets.
Right. specifically in the 10 weeks of pregnancy. So she will have to have a very healthy body, particularly taking into consideration the fact that when women have some deficiencies, like vitamin deficiency, iron deficiency, the baby doesn't wait.
Yeah, he just eats whatever's available.
Exactly. It takes from your savings, from your reserves of body. For example, if you don't have enough calcium in your body, the after pregnancy, your teeth are all rotten.
You have aches in your bones, exactly. In your joints.
So it's very important that if you want to be a happy woman, healthy woman, and mother, and wife,
right. You
have to be extra careful with your self-care, with your nutrition, with your diet. And don't take it as something that, it will just happen and, my body will provide for it. You will have to plan. You will have to eat based on a specific routine and mindful
diet.
Mindfully,
with awareness. Right, definitely. And especially because as women, we go through that process of our body literally just sheds itself of all its resources once a month. Naturally, I haven't met a single woman who didn't have, by default, iron deficiencies or calcium deficiencies or some sort of vitamin B deficiency, because it's going to happen to us either way. And if we're not extra careful in our diet and, like you said, our self-care, once we get to that point in our lives where we want to bring life to this world, it's like, we have to compromise, right? Either I won't be able to give the best and the fullest to that new life, or I'm going to put my life at risk.
Exactly. And sometimes you have to be careful not to give birth to a child with physical problems.
Yeah.
Some lack of vitamins and supplements in your body will lead to a baby with a lot of
deformities
and handicaps,
yeah.
Right? So these are very, very important. So the topic of nutrition and self-care is even more important and more significant when it comes to a woman, as she's carrying another human being, another life. She's the source of growth of a totally new creation inside her body. So she has to be extra careful of this, this extra living creature that is going to live in your body for 280 single days. And when you go to the Quran, ثُمَّ جَعَلْنَاهُ نُطْفَةً فِي قَرَارٍ مَكِينٍ. And then we put that nutfa, or that embryo, or that new creation, that new life, in a secure resting place, which is the body of a woman.
Beautiful. It's like our first home. All that and much more here on Muslim Ladies. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Thank you for joining us again on Muslim Lady. I am here in the studio with my darling sister Razia Shamili. It's so miraculous the way Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has designed the woman's body to produce an organ. It creates this whole new organ to house that baby inside itself and protect it and shield it and nurture it and raise it till it reaches that
full growth,
and it's ready to come into this world.
Subhanallah.
It's so mind-blowing. So imagine the care and the awareness you have to put into creating a whole new organ in order to house a whole new life.
Creation, exactly. And it's interesting how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has guarded it in, because it's been surrounded by
the other organs,
the ribs,
right?
and other organs.
Yeah.
It's an internal organ, again, surrounded by other helping soldiers in order to keep that guest safe for 280 days, right? these are just when you pay attention to all these complications, intricacies, to these details, they just blow your mind up, right?
They really do.
So the most important organ in a woman's body in the reproduction of a child, one of them is the uterus.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the fallopian tube, mm-hmm. and then we have the ovaries.
Yeah.
So these are three main key organs that
are defined involved. As reproductive organs.
Exactly. And when you're talking about the uterus, you're talking about a kind of pear-shaped small organ that only is 4 to 5 centimeters long and weighs about 80 grams, not even 100 grams. The interesting thing is that it's hanging. It's not in a fixed place in the body of a woman.
Right.
It's hanging through two tubes, the fallopian tubes.
Uh-huh.
So it has the ability to move a little bit.
Right.
And it's not fixed in its place, right? And something that a lot of girls are dealing with, just as we have the problem of impotency in men, we have the problem of irregular menstrual cycles in girls and women, which also causes infertility. And or they are problems in the course of, you know, they create problems in the pregnancy, like, of a woman.
And create excessive frustration.
Exactly.
Especially for Muslim ladies, the whole calculating process, when can I shower, when can I pray?
Exactly.
Why am I late? Why is it abnormal again?
Exactly. So it's really, all these are said to bring to your attention the fact that how you can help your body to have a healthier body, the way your lifestyle is, what you eat,
your state of mind
and your spiritual state are all effective factors in the health of this organ, specifically
and vice
the uterus.
Versa. And vice versa. I mean, well, like when this organ contracts any sort of illnesses, you see it. You see how much it messes a woman up.
Exactly.
Or
all
like
the hormones. And
yeah,
everything.
The hormones that kick up a storm, or when a woman is close to her menopause, and it's basically when this specific organ is no longer of use, she goes through this whole whirlpool of changes and things that we would consider as abnormalities, but it's just a natural part of her life now. And
that's why we have a gynecologist.
Yeah, women, exactly.
There's a specific doctor women need for their sexual organ system, reproductive system, right? Which men don't.
Mm-hmm.
All because of the complications and sensitivity of a woman's body is more than a man's body.
Definitely, absolutely.
Yeah, that's the point that I wanted to say.
Thank you so very much for being with us on this episode of Muslim Lady. We've been talking about certain problems. We haven't exactly delved into it in depth, but we completed our discussion regarding males' impotency, and we started upon certain reproductive system illnesses that women could contract and the complications it would create in the long term and in the reproduction process. Inshallah ta'ala, in further episodes of this show, we'll be discussing these topics furthermore. Make sure to tune in. Until then, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Who is the Lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. To Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity.
La ilaha illallah.
Muhammadur Rasulullah.
Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. Brioni Worthington, founder and board member of the new not-for-profit Climate Action Group, said, "By sharing and channeling data, we can maximize our efforts to combat carbon emissions and global warming. In other words, data is going to be the new water." We're prepared for you an article written by Robin McKee. The piece is titled, "How data could save Earth from climate change." SUBEC may seem an odd choice for a new organization that aims to accelerate high-tech efforts to combat climate crisis. The name is Indonesian, it transpires, and refers to an ancient agricultural system that allows farmers to coordinate their efforts when irrigating and growing crops. Brioni Worthington, founder and board member of the new not-for-profit Climate Action Group, said, "SUBEC allows farmers to carefully synchronize their use of water and so maximize rice production." She added, "And that is exactly what we're going to do with data. By sharing and channeling data, we can maximize our efforts to combat carbon emissions and global warming. In other words, data is going to be the new water." SUBEC will be officially launched in the coming days and will select and fund non-profit groups working around the world to combat the climate crisis. Early startups already helped by SUBEC include one group that is assisting UK local authorities to boost electric car use, while another group is using accurate weather forecasts to make best use of solar power across Britain and limit fossil fuel burning to generate electricity. These efforts are being launched after a week of headlines that have highlighted how perilous life on Earth is becoming as global heating grips the planet. Floods in Germany and Belgium left more than 150 people dead. Scientists revealed that the Brazilian rainforest now emits more carbon dioxide than it absorbs. And wildfires devastated vast tracts of Californian forests. In each case, scientists warned that rising temperatures triggered by increasing levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere are likely to have played a key role in bringing about these catastrophes. Brioni Worthington, a noted climate activist and lead author of the team which drafted the UK's 2008 Climate Change Act, legislation that required the UK to reduce its carbon emissions by at least 80% of their 1990 levels, says urgent action is clearly needed. At the time, Worthington was working with Friends of the Earth, but was seconded to government to help design the legislation. For her efforts, she was made a peer in 2010. Since then, Brioni Worthington has continued in the battle against the climate crisis, and in 2019 she read Harvard academic Shoshana Zuboff's book The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, which focuses, disapprovingly, on high-tech companies' growing use of personal data to make money. Brioni Worthington says, "It woke me up to the fact that a whole new world of digital tools was being deployed to generate profits." She added, "I realized it would be better if those tools could be used to save the planet, to protect the global commons, and not merely to boost share value." Worthington contacted G. Fernando, a technology entrepreneur, and the pair hatched the idea of SUBAC, which has since been given funding by the Quadrature Climate Foundation, QCF, that was recently set up by the London investment management company Quadrature Capital. Its aim is to provide initial funding to help groups establish themselves, but also to give expert guidance over legal management and other issues. G. Fernando says, "When you start up a company or group, you are quite alone," adding, "So if you have a community around you that can offer help, human resources, finance, tools, that is incredibly helpful. And then, once the group gets on their feet, they can then start to help other startup entrepreneurs wanting to open new avenues in order to help fight climate change." Fernando's words are echoed by several of the groups that SUBAC has already helped to set up, such as Open Climate Fix. This aimed to reduce carbon emissions by improving weather forecasts to make the best use of solar power plants, whose effectiveness is reduced when the weather is cloudy. Open Climate Fix's co-founder Jack Kelly said, "If we get very good data about forthcoming cloud cover, we will know exactly how much solar-generated electricity can be provided in the United Kingdom on a given day," adding, "That will mean we will not need to generate unnecessary electricity from other sources, in particular fossil fuel sources, such as gas, because we have underestimated the solar power we will get that day. That will help to reduce carbon emissions." Jack Kelly added, "SUBAC's provision of engineers and software experts who have turned weather satellite images into cloud cover forecasts was a critical piece of assistance." A similar tale is told by Richard Allen of New Automotive, which is monitoring new electric cars are being taken up in communities across the United Kingdom. Factors include vehicle use, sales patterns, and favorite types of cars and trucks. That data can be fed to local authorities to ensure charging stations, battery replacement services, and other resources are provided to maximize take-up of electric cars. Richard Allen says, "Replacing petrol and diesel vehicles with electric versions as quickly as possible is going to be extremely important in reducing carbon emissions." He adds, "And data about take-up rates in communities will be vital in achieving that goal." This view is endorsed by Brioni Worthington. She says, "Just a major corporation has lots of different companies under its control. SUBAC is going to help set up lots of new outfits, each aimed at boosting efforts to control climate change." climate crisis in numbers, 415, the number of parts per million of carbon dioxide that make up the atmosphere. Before the Industrial Revolution in the mid-1700s, the global average amount of carbon dioxide was about 280 parts per million. Burning fossil fuels has since added a further 135 parts per million, and if global energy demand continues to grow and is met mostly with fossil fuels, that figure could exceed 900 parts per million by 2100. 3.6 millimeter, the estimated increase each year in sea level, according to measurements of tide gauges and satellite data. This is a result of human-induced warming of the planet. It is projected that the sea level will rise a further 40 to 80 centimeters by 2100, although future ice sheets melt could make these values considerably higher. 43.1 billion. In 2019, that was the number of tons of carbon dioxide from human activities that were emitted into the atmosphere. Carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas that absorbs heat and releases it gradually over time, like bricks in a fireplace after the fire goes out. Current increases in greenhouse gases has tipped the Earth's energy budget out of balance, trapping additional heat and raising Earth's average temperature. 28 trillion, the estimated number of tons of ice that our planet has lost between 1994 and 2017. Global warming has a particularly severe impact at higher latitudes, and this has been most noticeable in the Arctic region. Scientists worry that as ice melts, less solar radiation will be reflected back into space, and temperatures will rise even faster. Ice loss will become increasingly severe as a result.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.